The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're very welcome along. And yet again, John Duggan and Johnny Ward just cannot be in the same room together. I'm not sure. It looks like it's just meant to not be at this stage. It's episode 88 of The Racing Pod, and it's Tom Malone in studio, as you will see if you're watching on the screen. And as I say, it's episode 88. We're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews and crack. The first half of the podcast every week is free to air, and the second part is exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up by going to offtheball.com/join. And this week for members, we'll focus on some of the action across in Britain and the Curragh. We'll talk more about the Curragh the first half of the show, and we'll guess Tom's charity bet. And in truth, in the one of the great things about being involved in racing as a journalist or anything else is there's always something going on. There's pretty much incessant racing. There's always a storyline. It's been actually a relatively quiet week, but we'll reflect on Thurles fallout, which was basically Thurles was only just over a week ago we heard that news, and we'll reflect on a little bit of Galway as well and some other matters. And we'll have Sam Norris and William Hill in the second half of the show to talk to us as well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Yeah, it'll have to be you and John next week because I'll be in France. So I know it's a bit of a brag, but yeah, I'll be. Actually, you were there earlier on in the year as well, weren't you, South France?
What part of France?
Antibes.
That's one of my go-to places to, Antibes is a beautiful spot. I think even Damien Duff is a fan, either Antibes or one of the adjoining. Antibes is weird because if you fly to Nice, you can get a cab for maybe 20 minutes away, and it's very touristy, but it's a bit like Galway in that it's very touristy but very friendly. It's like, it's not. Have you been?
Yeah, I've been to Nice and I've been to Golf Shoran, which is just down the way. So I have been in Antibes before, but I haven't actually stayed there. But yeah, lovely part of the world, so I'm looking forward to that bit of late summer sun. And
Cansumer is very nearby.
Cansumer is the closest race course. Yeah. There is a brilliant kind of potential sport trek that was there a couple of years ago, where the Heineken Cup final was on in Marseille, and then you have Barcelona's just down the way. You have the Grand Prix in Monaco, and you have the film festival in Cannes that all happened sort of within about 10 or 12 days of each other. So there was kind of a dream trip there if you were sort of the, you know, the yachting class. Was kind of an ideal way to spend a few days.
I'm more of a have not rather than a have yacht, but on the bullet list actually of race courses, this is an interesting, completely unplanned start to the show. If you find it interesting, I've been to Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct in the States, and I've been to Longchamp, Chantilly, and apart from that, I've actually only been to British and Irish racetracks. So where have you been?
Yeah, no, I'd be the same. I've only done, you know, the British and Irish, and then obviously I did Longchamp as well. But no, it's definitely one of those sort of like, when I retire now, that's a sort of, even you see it on race courses now, you know, there's a lot of retirees on race courses. And that's the kind of dream, isn't it? You just go, you take in, maybe take in Dubai on the way to the Melbourne Cup or something like that. I don't know. Ryan Moore's winter is basically the dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you just trek around to all the, you know, the big international spots, taking in, you know, like I said, Dubai on your way to, Australia and then back to America and home.
Well, Brendan Duke Jr., who both of us know, would have one time described himself as a professional race goer. So his job was to go to the races for nothing if he could, talk to people and, you know, bestow on them his information and his knowledge. And one of those places will be Thurles. And you're on about retired people. Thurles, Thurles would be a bit like going to mass in many respects. The average age is of the person who hasn't yet passed away. And that's like the person who buys a newspaper. Thurles would be like the older gentleman, mainly gentlemen, but a gentlewoman would be there as well. We're still kind of dealing with the fallout of last Friday's news in relation to Thurles. One thing that maybe we didn't talk with Tom last week was, it just seems so odd to me that HRI was so, like, it was almost like, we'll make this announcement to be as little known as possible. And HRI was sort of dealing with the fallout as we were this time last week.
Yeah, literally this time last week. And it's one of those situations where more people have been trying to distance themselves from the situation than ingratiate themselves to the situation over the last few weeks. Because obviously the jockeys have you know, had to distance themselves in the situation that they had made complaints. The IHRB have had to distance themselves from their own handbook that they say is only a guide and they're not rules, even though, you know, you need to go by the handbook to create the license, or sorry, to renew the license, which of course in the case of Thurles was up at the end of the year. So yeah, it's interesting on that front. I mean, the
as ever, Tom, with you know, it was Oscar Wilde who said, albeit in response to a question in the form of a character in whatever the play was, you know, the truth is rarely pure and never simple. With Thurles, it's complex. It's quite complex. And I'm not, it's very easy in life to jump on it's to take a side on an issue and to feel that if people agree with you, to feel some sort of meaning or some sort of, you know, place that you want to be in. But with Thurles, this is not straightforward. And Thurles is a dilapidated racecourse. And that's not the fault of anyone, really. It's just that's where it is. They haven't invested. I don't think they've even looked for grants to invest.
No, and the level of investment required is, you know, is eye-watering. And it's one of those, you know, and I've just seen so much ludicrous speculation about it. Of why doesn't a conglomeration come in? It's like the amount of money it would cost to buy the place, just as the land, the cost of land in the area. I mean, if you have been keeping an eye in the courts, you will see that there is quite a lot of land that's been bought up at ludicrous prices in and around Tipperary.
Much of it by Coolmore.
but that's, you know, and that's the reality of it. So to think that, you know, a few people are going to get together and buy Thurles and, you know, not have to put like millions into it. I know the Irish Field quoted, you know, sources during the week saying, oh, it costs 300,000 to put in a watering facility. Like, that is absolute minimum. And that does not include someone to run the watering system and the upkeep and the constant, you know, that's just an initial outline figure. The other side of these investments is that the racecourse or conglomeration or whomever has to put up 60%. So it's like, you know, well, we're going to buy this business and then the first thing we're going to have to do is invest probably the amount we cost us to buy the place again in building works and remedial works and essentially legislative process, that a regulative process that will ensure that the place can get a license that, you know, may only be granted on a rolling 12-month basis, you know, with further stipulations to further invest. I mean, it's the other side of the house, where does the income come from? You know, the income is coming from media rights. Media rights, the way the agreement was created was that it would be somewhat front loaded, you know, essentially a sweetener deal, and then the payments decline slightly once they reflect the turnover, turnover.
Per racetrack,
yeah. So, like, the smaller racetracks are now going to have smaller media rights payouts, so they have lesser income. Their gate receipts are negligible anyway. Mm. So you're going to have a situation where you're going to have to run a racecourse. Obviously, it only has, whatever, 16 to 20 race meetings a year, lies idle for, therefore, 345 days of the year, and you have to find and put a team in place to run it for those days and, you know, sell it as an event space or whatever they try and do.
Yeah, I think in the cold reality of the situation, there are too many racetracks in Ireland for the sport we have.
Absolutely. At the moment, we could have a race every 2 weeks at a different track. I mean, that is too
many. Yeah, and as it is, in my view, and again, I may be wrong, I feel there's far too much racing. So I do feel that it's like so much in sport now, less is more, and it's more is less, really, and it's the more is less is that's prevailing in sport now. But I would be sad if Thurles went. I just feel it absolutely has a place as a racetrack.
I thought that Fran Berry made an interesting point that maybe there's a scope for a greenfield racing site whereby Thurles and, you know, if HRI came in and took over Thurles and they have Tipperary and essentially build a greenfield site, build a racetrack, a purpose-built racetrack with an all-weather track, with whatever other extra facilities on a greenfield site, that does sound a lot like, you know, that Michael Lowry boom time idea with the, you know, we'll have our own Las Vegas in the hills at Tipperary, to misquote the song.
What was it called again? Alan Sweetman brought that up, actually.
That was brought up as a potential thing. But then you're talking about something that's going to... I mean, considering the controversy about the cost of the Curra, that would dwarf the cost of the Curra.
The irony about the cost of the Curra controversy is, if it costs whatever, 90 million, it would now be probably closer to 190 million.
Absolutely.
Right? That's one thing we have to... And the Curra has a lot going for it potentially down the line. But racetracks that function merely as racetracks, they probably should have an uncertain future, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, places like, I think Eddie Scally was on the Nick Luck podcast during the week, and obviously Owen Byrne and Tremore has laid out the difficulties. And by the way, Eddie Scally and Owen Byrne are two of the best racecourse managers in the country. Like, they are as sharp operators, the pair of them. The, you know, they, like, Owen has done amazing work in Tremore, and Eddie is just one of the shrewdest operators in the game. So if those lads are saying it's difficult, imagine how difficult it is for the people who don't have their level of experience or, you know, ingrained or rooted in the community. It's, it, you know, it is a worrying time. There's no doubt about that, especially for a smaller track.
And this is what those who, you know, those who decry people gambling on horses and all of that and who've become so negative on it have to be cognizant of the fact that if people stop betting on racehorses, and basically bookmakers themselves are moving away to more mug betting, which is like, you know, live sports, slots, everything else. The bookmakers are essentially, thankfully William Hill, our sponsor, isn't, but bookmakers by and large are moving away from racing, and turnover is massively down. Turnover is massively down, and that will have a major impact in Ireland. I thought some of the comments about from in relation to the IHRB guidelines and stuff, I thought they were misguided, to be honest. And again, Turles gave a brief statement. It's a bit like Damien Duff at Shelburne. You give a brief statement and then you kind of disappear. So there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered. And that's absolutely the right of the people. And the Maloneys and Turles probably want to, they want to relax, and it's a stressful job, but there's a lot of stuff that is unknown at the moment, and we shall see what happens. But yeah, as of now, Thurles ain't racing. Tipperary and Wexford are today, and we've good action tomorrow in Ireland at the Curragh, and on Sunday we're racing in Downpatrick, another really well run racetrack. Thoughts on Galway before we kick on into the weekend's action? Crowds were very good. I think, in fairness, the weather was quite good, and we had some compelling racing.
Yeah, and it looks like that the Noel Mead camp confirmed that they will appeal against that Galway hurdle verdict. So, yeah,
actually, what did you make of that?
Yeah, well, look, I think they're entitled to appeal. You know, we've seen them given, and there was probably enough. I thought there might have been enough space, but look, the fact that the Tony Miler didn't change his stick is the real issue.
And didn't it show how good drone footage is? You know,
yeah. How damning it is! Yeah. How damning the evidence is! Because a couple of angles there, you're like, there's nothing in this, and then you see the drone footage, you're like, oh, okay. And that's one of the things as well that the stewards do, from what I understand, have access to more angles and like 4K footage and all that sort of stuff that, you know, you wouldn't always have on the racetrack or as a viewer at home.
Again, I just feel that racing doesn't sell itself well enough, because that whole Galway hurdle, there was so much. You could have 2 hours of the entire live TV show based on the Galway hurdle, and like Ruby Walsh giving analysis, maybe another jockey giving analysis, hearing from the protagonists involved. There's so much there that I still think racing... Do you know the way, like, the pandemic forced us to do things that we never thought about, and then they became very obvious, like maybe working from home.
Yeah, working from home, doing Zoom these calls, shows via Zoom.
And
yeah,
all of these things, like small things. It's like you're beaten down into something. You never think about it. I think racing, we just do the same things over and over, and we don't sell the sport as well as
we do. To be fair, last night on Racing TV, there was an incident at Sandown where Oisin Murphy lost the race. And actually, Harry Davies came out and spoke to Lydia Hislop immediately afterwards, and he was on the sort of 40-1 shot that beat the odds on shot for Peter Chappell Higham, and he came out and spoke to Lydia Hislop, and a really good piece, and a really just good, relaxed, engaging type piece where, you know, two of them, you know, obviously Lydia's top class, but the two of them just, you know, spoke over the event, and it was, yeah, just one of those pieces like, yeah, that doesn't happen often enough where a jockey just comes out after the fact and explains it, says what, you know, relayed what he had said in the stewards' inquiry. I thought it was a good piece. Like, yeah, well done, Racing TV. That's a, you know, similar pieces like that. Like, you'd encourage more jockey. Like, you just feel like too often jockeys just stay in the weigh room, and I just feel like, you know, after a race, if they had an hour or two, if they did just go out and like pick up a microphone and give a little bit of insight, again, in a reaction kind of way, it's something that would enhance the viewing experience a little bit.
I was thinking lately of getting a tip from a trainer at Punchestown about a horse who was running at Dundalk the following Wednesday, and it was a 6 furlong race, and the horse was like 20-25 to 1, and I was just like, I'm going to go heavy on this, like, I'm just going to take a punt on it. In the course of 60 seconds, I won like an absolutely life-changing amount of money, And obviously, more likely or not, the bet was going to lose, but it didn't. And that feeling of, that's what racing can do. You can still have so much fun. If you can get like an accumulator up, you can have so much like fun, and you can win life-changing amounts if you hit the, you know, the...
Yeah, those jackpots.
The lucky jackpot. And are we going to win a life-changing amount on your selections over the Curra? Are you at the Curra tomorrow?
Yeah, I look forward to the Curra tomorrow. I'm just delighted with what Aidan's done, and he's running Gestad and True Love. You know, during the week, you're all sitting there going, oh, Gestad's going to be fours on here, isn't he? We're going to have another procession for Aidan's 18th Phoenix Stakes.
Tom is talking about the Phoenix Stakes, centrepiece of the Curra card tomorrow. Cracking day to go racing. It's Keeneland Phoenix Stakes. Keeneland, the big breeding hub in the States. And at 4 o'clock, 6 furlongs, the team, DuBronx, Gestad, Power Blue, Puerto Rico, who I tipped up strongly against True Love last time and was absolutely no match for her. Green Sense and the aforementioned True Love. Now, Tom, when True Love True Love was sent off 12s on debut, albeit in a listed race, beaten by Lady Iman, who's a smart type. When she ran behind Gestad's at Navan, she was 2-5, and Gestad, who looks like one of the best juveniles I've seen in a long time, was 7-1 against his stablemate. He beat her then. Is there anything to suggest after their respective Royal Ascot efforts, and she ran since at the Curra, that he won't beat her tomorrow?
Yeah, I think there's a lot.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I just can't get over her performance in the Agassiz last day. There was the railway. But
the
like,
speed figures apparently just aren't... Yeah. No, you can't say that. You just can't. Because you're looking at the race and you're like, God, she's absolutely demolished. Puerto Rico looks a very good horse. No, and I just got the vibe from talking to Aidan on and off the record afterwards, and I'm sort of relaying what I thought. I just didn't get the impression... They think she's an absolute worldly.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I got the impression before Ascot, they did think that, and they were astounded.
Who's
she was
they?
Beaten.
Like connections.
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 The lads.
The lads.
Combined age of about 230.
Casually mention this group of elderly billionaires as if they're, you know, just a group of football
the lads
casuals.
Were out last the lads. Night. The lads like True... Well, the lads, who doesn't like True Love? But the lads do like
no
True Love.
There's no doubt that they... Like, there was a piece done in the field before Royal Ascot, and, you know, it was one of the, you know, the key messages that came out of it was that they were very, very impressed with True Love. Couldn't believe she was beaten by Gestad. Obviously, Gestad comes out and wins the Coventry. She goes and follows up, later on the week. Then she goes and wins as well as she did.
And in fairness, I thought Puerto Rico ran. He ran very well at Goodwood in a Group Two.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that I was backing a bad horse.
No,
per se.
No. I thought on the back of that race she might go debutante and then go to the Meudler, because she just looked like the way she hit the line hard. I assumed they would just go and, you know, step her up to 7 furlongs. She just kept lengthening and lengthening. So I assumed she would become a seven furlong filly. By the end of the year, I didn't think she would actually run in this race. So pleasantly surprised, but I still think she can put it up to Gestad.
I've noticed the betting exchanges, how much they've fallen, like in terms of turnover and massively. And I still like people pricing up races. And I want the betting ring to return to a situation where the bookies in the betting ring are not on the betting exchanges. The old ring can return in some shape or form. But that's a long way of saying William Hill had to price up this race, or whoever priced up first. 8-11 Gestad,
9-4
True Love was a bit of fun. Now, actually, with Hill's 15-8, so one is rated 115 True Love, Gestad is rated 114, but Ryan Moore has chosen seemingly Gestad, so it's to me it's priced off roughly as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
You don't agree?
It's one of those, isn't it? You're like, well, if Gestad's a worldie, then he's an amazing price, and you know, it's whatever camp you're in, you think they're a good price.
Yeah.
You know, Gestad was sort of fours on during the week when you thought this was going to be essentially a one horse race. So, you know, 8-11, 15-8. To be honest, I saw Gestad when he won his maiden at Navan. I thought, yeah, he's decent, but I was surprised True Love was beaten, because again, I thought that Lady Imam was just that form line was sort of all conquering through Irish 2-year-olds, particularly at 5 furlongs. So the fact that True Love was beaten that day, I was like, oh God, what? Like, do I need to go back and throw all my homework in the bin here? But
we're going to wrap up this afternoon. Look, this isn't your charity bet.
No, it's not my charity bet, okay. But I am sticking with True Love here just because I thought her performance in the Curra on Oaks weekend was my 2-year-old performance of the year so far.
If you want to follow, I've a few selections on the Racing TV page later on, but one of them is running at Kilbeggan. I'll be at Kilbeggan tomorrow, and Estalian, the 5:27 for Peter Fahey, should take plenty of beating, but I would be sweet on Gestad, albeit, I mean, who isn't sweet on 8-11 shots? Well, Tom Malone actually was home with second favourite. In fairness to Tom, he was completely made a mockery of me with Puerto Rico taking her on the last day, and she demolished him. I was watching this race thinking, this is one of the best horse fillies. It must be the fastest filly Aidan has ever trained.
No.
I just didn't.
Figures don't lie, apparently.
Yeah, I just... anyway, the figures apparently... Anyway, it is what it is. That was the first half of the show. And if you are listening to the free version of the podcast, we have to leave you here. If you're looking for more, including our look at next week's action at Royal Ascot and Tom's charity bet, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast with all our racing tips, insights and stories from the week's action.